So it's October 28th, Halloween's just around the corner, and tonight we're tackling a question that I think everyone secretly wondered about at some point. Is Dracula real?
Dracula, such a fascinating blend of history and horror, myth and reality all wrapped up in one name.
Right, and that's exactly where our deep dive is taking us today. We're looking at this article from mysticinvestigations.com. They're all about the paranormal, and their take is that Dracula is real.
Interesting.
But not the Dracula we all think we know from books and movies.
This is where it gets really interesting. The article starts with Vlad the Impaler, the historical figure Vlad III. And, well, you know, his reputation certainly fits the whole vampire thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Vlad the Impaler. This guy was brutal. We're talking tens of thousands of people impaled. A level of ruthlessness that would make even our modern horror movies look tame.
It's almost like his life was setting the stage for something even darker, you know? The article talks about his death in battle against the Ottomans, which seems normal enough for a ruler back then, but then it throws in this twist. An ancient vampire named Dagon shows up and basically stops Vlad from, you know, dying for good, and then turns him into a vampire.
Hold on, wait. Who's this Dagon character, and why would he even bother turning Vlad the Impaler into a vampire? Of all people.
Well, Dagon himself is a bit of a mystery, but the article says he's a first-generation vampire, almost 69,000 years old.
Wow.
Imagine the stories he could tell, right? He's supposed to be from this lost civilization called Lemuria. And get this, he was actually born a vampire because his father was possessed by a demon. So we've got biblical stuff mixed with ancient history and vampires all in one.
Okay, so Dagon. This super old, powerful vampire with a crazy backstory. He sees Vlad doing all this impaling and terrorizing, and that's why he chooses him. Seems like making him a vampire would just, like, make things even more chaotic.
Well, that's what I found so interesting about the article. It argues that becoming a vampire actually made Vlad more controlled, more chillingly ordered in his actions. He goes from a bloodthirsty ruler to a predator who actually plans things out, a real strategist of the night.
Okay, that's way scarier. A vampire who's actually thought things through, not just acting on bloodlust. So what kind of powers does this new vampire Vlad, this Dracula, have? I mean, it has to be more than just the basic fangs and staying out of the sun, right?
You're right on the money. The article goes beyond the typical vampire tropes, saying Dracula has mastered dark magic. Apparently that's rare, even for vampires. It gives him psychic abilities, telepathy, and even, get this, resistance to sunlight.
So he can walk around in the sun, no more classic weakness. This Dracula sounds pretty much invincible.
Right. It's like they took everything scary about vampires and turned it way up. But before we get too lost in how powerful he supposedly is, let's talk about his titles. Because according to this article, Dracula's got a lot of them.
Yeah, the article kind of goes overboard with the whole title thing.
Blood Prince of Romania. Grand Duke of Transylvania. Oh, and this one's my favorite. Dark Lord Master of the Carpathian Mountains.
Darth Lord Master of the Carpathian Mountains. Come on, that sounds like something a kid would make up while playing pretend.
I know, right? You almost have to laugh. But it does add to this image of Dracula as this larger-than-life figure, someone who inspires both fear and, weirdly, a kind of respect in the vampire world.
Okay, all this talk about Dracula brings up a big question. What about Bram Stoker? He's the guy who wrote the famous novel, Made Dracula a Literary Icon. Where does he fit into all of this?
Well, here's where the article gets really blurry, where fiction and reality seem to mix. It actually claims that Bram Stoker met the real Dracula, introduced to him by some world traveler, and used that as inspiration for his novel.
Wait, so you're telling me Bram Stoker, the author of the most famous vampire book ever, might have actually met the real-life Dracula? That's wild.
And it gets wilder. The article says Stoker visited Dracula's castle, saw vampire murders firsthand, and was even offered immortality by Dracula himself.
Immortality, that's quite an offer.
Right. But according to the article, Stoker turned it down, and the result. He was cursed by Dracula and died because of it.
Oof. That's dark, even for a vampire story. It adds a whole other layer to the whole Stoker-Dracula connection.
Absolutely. Makes Dracula seem not just powerful, but also capable of being pretty, well, petty.
Okay, so we have this superpowered ancient vampire who likes a good title and may have had a hand in killing the author who made him famous. Anything else we should know from this article?
Oh yeah, there's one more thing, a prophecy. It says that Dracula is gonna conquer the world, but there is a twist. His soul is linked to Joan of Arc, and he's destined to die by fire just like she did.
Joan of Arc, the French hero who was burned at the stake. How is Dracula, this centuries-old vampire, connected to her?
The article doesn't get into specifics, but it suggests they were born on the same day, Joan of Arc dying and Dracula being born. Some kind of cosmic link between their souls, like a battle of good and evil playing out over centuries.
So even though Dracula seems unstoppable, he's got this weakness built in, tied to a historical figure known for being, well, good. Classic storytelling. The hero, or in this case, the villain, has a fatal flaw.
Exactly. It makes you wonder, can someone as powerful as Dracula really be a puppet of fate?
This is insane. We've barely scratched the surface of this article, and it's already a mix of vampire lore, historical figures, and prophecies. What else is there to uncover in this deep dive?
Well, the article goes on to introduce us to Dracula's inner circle. His son, Drac, who's supposedly this unique vampire hybrid, and a powerful sorceress named Damnatia. And to top it off, they mention this lavish annual party Dracula throws called the Blood Ball. And guess when it's supposed to be happening?
Don't tell me.
Tonight.
A vampire party with hybrid son and a sorceress. This is starting to sound like a supernatural soap opera.
Right. But if you think that's over the top, wait till you hear the address the article gives for Dracula.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. Lay it on me. What's this infamous vampire address?
666 Sanguine Street, Paduria, Vampiroler, Transylvania. Dival City, Romania, 66666.
No way. 666 Sanguine Street in Dival City.
Yeah.
They weren't even trying to be subtle with that one.
It's definitely over the top, which seems to be a theme with this whole article. A mix of history, speculation, and a bit of dark humor.
So where do we go from here? We've got Dracula's backstory, his powers, his entourage, and even his spooky address. What else is there to explore?
We can't forget about the comment section. That's where things get really interesting, with people claiming they've encountered Dracula themselves. We've got debates about the origins of vampires, theories about the vampire world. It's a whole treasure trove of different perspectives on the Dracula situation.
All right, let's dive into those comments then. I'm ready to see what other rabbit holes we can find.
All right, so let's jump into these comments. I think this is where we usually find the most, different opinions and insights about the topic. Anything catching your eye so far?
Yeah, there's a lot here. But this one comment from a... Drake Alexander really stood out to me. Oh. Get this. He claims to be a vampire.
Wow. Okay, now that's taking the conversation to a whole new level. We're not just reading about Dracula. We're hearing from someone who claims to be, you know, in that world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Drake doesn't hold back. He talks about meeting Dracula centuries ago and basically being hypnotized by him. He even remembers this horrifying massacre he was forced to be a part of.
Mm.
And here's the creepy part. He remembers it fondly.
Oh, wow. That's disturbing. It really speaks to the power Dracula must have to not just control someone, but to like warp their perception of things, even another vampire.
It's almost like we're seeing two sides of the same coin here. On one side, you have the historical Vlad the Impaler, brutal and ruthless. And on the other, this charming, intelligent, but incredibly manipulative supernatural being. A really scary combo.
It definitely makes you think about free will, even in the supernatural world, right? I mean, could someone like Drake, who supposedly had centuries to develop his own power and will really be that susceptible to Dracula's influence?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we have Drake, this vampire, who seems to be under Dracula's thumb. What other perspectives are we seeing in these comments?
Well, we have another commenter here. Goes by White Wolf. They claim to have encountered Dracula astrally. So, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, astral projection is this idea that your consciousness can leave your body and travel to other realms. And what's interesting about White Wolf's comment is that they don't think Dracula's actually evil.
Wait, hold on. We just heard from a vampire who says he was hypnotized by Dracula, remembers a massacre fondly, and now someone's saying Dracula might not be bad.
That's the thing about these kinds of topics. You get so many different viewpoints, so many ways to interpret the same figure. Even with claims that seem unbelievable, there's always room for, you know, different perspective.
So White Wolf is basically suggesting that Dracula, despite all the evidence, might have a good side. I mean, we did talk about that Joan of Arc connection and the prophecy about him dying by fire. Maybe there's more to him than we think.
Exactly. That's what makes this so interesting. It's not just accepting everything we read, but, yeah. You know, thinking critically about it, considering different viewpoints and forming our own conclusions.
Okay, so we have Drake and White Wolf giving us completely opposite views of Dracula. What other comments are you finding interesting?
Oh, there's so many. People debating the origins of vampires, whether there's really a vampire kingdom, even the true extent of Dracula's powers. It really reflects the bigger conversations about the supernatural with skeptics and believers, those who look for logic and those who embrace the unknown.
It's like this article has tapped into this universal fascination with the unexplained. That possibility, no matter how small, that something like Dracula could actually be out there.
Yeah, and that's what we love about these deep dives. It's not just presenting facts. It's exploring the mystery, the possibilities, you know, the things that bump in the night.
So with all these different opinions and debates, what are we supposed to make of all this? What do we take away from this deep dive?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? We've got history, mythology, speculation, personal accounts, all mixed together. I think it's up to each of us to decide what we believe, how much weight we give to these claims.
True. I mean, on the one hand, it's a great story, the idea that someone like Dracula could be out there pulling strings from the shadows. But it's also easy to dismiss it as just a fun Halloween story, right? Pure fiction.
Yeah, that's always the struggle with these topics, finding that balance between skepticism and, you know, being open-minded. We should be critical of what we read, but also allow ourselves to be fascinated by the possibilities, even if they seem far-fetched.
This deep dive has definitely made me think about all the vampire stories I've heard over the years. What started as a lighthearted look at Dracula for Halloween has become this unsettling thought that maybe, just maybe, there's some truth hidden in these myths and legends.
And that's the power of a good story, right? It challenges our assumptions, makes us think about things in new ways, and leaves us with a sense of wonder and maybe a little bit of healthy fear.
Speaking of fear, remember that part in the article about Dracula keeping up with modern media? They even mentioned this big annual party he throws, the Blood Ball, to, you know, celebrate himself, and it's supposedly happening tonight.
It does add a little bit of a creepy layer to our conversation, doesn't it? As we're sitting here analyzing him, his powers, his supposed actions, is he out there somewhere listening in? Does he even know we're talking about him?
Okay, now that's getting creepy. It's like we've accidentally invited him into our conversation. But hey, if you are out there listening, Dracula, no hard feelings, right? We're just trying to understand you.
I think that's a great point to end on. It reminds us that the line between fact and fiction isn't always clear, that even the most unbelievable stories can have a kernel of truth to them. And who knows, maybe somewhere out there lurking in the shadows, Dracula's listening, having a good chuckle at our attempts to figure him out.
Well, here we are, wrapping up our deep dive into Dracula. From Vlad the Impaler to a sunlight-resistant vampire with a flair for the dramatic. We've even heard from a vampire claiming to be under his influence, and another perspective suggesting he might not be all bad. It's been quite a ride.
It really has. We've gone from history to mythology, touched on the power of belief, and even explored the nature of good and evil. What are your biggest takeaways from all of this?
I think what struck me most is how much one article, and even its comment section, can open up so many different ways of thinking. It makes you realize how much our perception of figures like Dracula, you know, they're shaped by stories, both historical and fictional.
That's a great point. We often come to these topics with these preconceived notions based on what we've read or seen in pop culture. But when you actually start looking deeper, considering all these different perspectives and interpretations, it gets a lot more complex and honestly a lot more interesting.
For sure. And it makes you wonder, you know, what other historical figures or legendary creatures might have more to their stories than we think? What other rabbit holes are out there waiting to be explored?
I like that. And speaking of rabbit holes, there's actually one more detail from the article that we haven't really touched on, and it ties in perfectly with Halloween.
Oh, right. The Blood Ball, this big party that Dracula supposedly throws every year. It's mentioned almost casually in the article, but when you think about it, it adds a whole other layer to the whole Dracula mythos.
Exactly. We're talking about this potentially ancient and incredibly powerful being, and he throws parties. It almost makes him seem, well, I don't know, more human in a way. What do you think the purpose of this Blood Ball could be? A show of power? Some kind of celebration of darkness? Or could it be something more symbolic?
Almost like a challenge, you know? Mm. Like, look past the monstrous image you have of Dracula and consider that maybe there's more to him than meets the eye.
I like that. And the fact that it's supposed to be happening tonight on Halloween makes it even more interesting.
Okay, that's pretty wild. Imagine somewhere out there, in some remote castle or hidden underground lair, Dracula's hosting this massive gathering of creatures of the night.
It's definitely a captivating thought. And as we wrap up our deep dive, I think it's a fitting image to leave our listeners with.
I agree. So to everyone listening, while you're out enjoying the Halloween festivities, remember that the most interesting stories are often the ones that blur the lines between reality and myth.
Mm.
And who knows, maybe somewhere out there, hidden in the shadows of this Halloween night, something truly extraordinary is happening. Happy Halloween, everyone.